Question 3, a constitutional amendment regarding food. For some, question 3 on the November ballot is about the future and protecting Maine people against big agriculture or government intrusion. Others see it as a dangerous measure which might have unintended consequences. The question reads, all individuals have a natural, inherent, and unalienable right to food, including the right to save and exchange seeds and the right to grow, raise, harvest, produce, and consume the food of their own choosing for their own nourishment, sustenance, bodily health, and well-being, as long as an individual does not commit trespassing, theft, poaching, or other abuses of private property rights, public lands, or natural resources in the harvesting, production, or acquisition of food. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss what this means for Maine voters. That's next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Question 3 on the November ballot is our topic today. It is a proposed amendment to Maine's Constitution that would ensure that the natural, inherent, and inalienable right to food is ensured. We will learn that what this means, and we will hear support and opposition to that proposed amendment. My guest, Catherine Conlow, who is Executive Director of the Maine Municipal Association, which opposes Question 3, and Heather Rettberg, co-owner of Quills End Farm in Penobscot. She is co-author of the proposed amendment. Of course, we invite your questions and your comments, our email address, and please make your email brief. We expect a lot of questions today. talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling. You can find us on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Kathy and Heather, thank you so much for joining us today. And Heather, I'm going to start with you. You've been involved with this issue for years, the issues that have led to question 3 on the ballot. Tell us how this proposed amendment came about and what it states.
Oh, yeah, thanks. It's good to be with you today. I have been involved with the food sovereignty movement in Maine as a lead advocate for the last decade. And the right to food has been before the legislature for 6 years over 3 legislative sessions. And so what we love to share with people is exactly what the language is, what it purports to do, and what will happen. We're more familiar with statutes that allow and disallow or permit and regulate, but a constitutional amendment that protects an individual right is less familiar. So the proposed amendment has 4 parts. That all individuals have a natural, inherent, and unalienable right to food. So that means that food must be adequate, available, accessible, and sustainable. It requires that a person can either feed themselves directly from the land or natural resources, or be able to obtain and purchase adequate food. And the government's role isn't to provide food, but like our other constitutionally protected rights, the government's role is to protect and respect that right. So the second part then is to including the right to save and exchange seeds. We know right now that there are 4 major corporations that control most of the world's seed supply. And so in Maine, we want to act to secure the resilience of Maine people by nurturing our genetic seed diversity and future food supply. And then the third clause is the one that is actually featured in the ballot question that people will see on November 2nd, the right to grow, raise, harvest, produce, and consume the food of our own choosing for our own nourishment, sustenance, bodily health, and well-being. So the food sovereignty movement protected our traditional foodways at a community level through municipal ordinance, and the right to food constitutional amendment protects our traditional foodways at an individual level for all individuals in Maine. So this clause is about securing a right to food self-provisioning, ensuring that Maine people will retain the autonomy to grow and raise our own food and choose what foods we need to nourish our health. And then the fourth clause is the clause of restraint. Like every other constitutional protection, there's a protection of a liberty and then a constraint on that liberty. So this is a protection against abuse, And a clause that affirms our relationship as stewards of nature by specifically, explicitly guarding against the abuse of public lands, natural resources, including wildlife, and also private property, including domestic animals. And that is sort of a quick overview of the four clauses of the one sentence that makes up the constitutional amendment proposal.
You know, Heather, I think you're probably well aware that many people, when they first read this, think, why do we need this?
Yeah, and that, I mean, is a fundamental question. And for that is the fundamental answer of a constitutionally protected right. There are some big structural problems. Anybody who's involved with food policy in Maine knows we're at the end of a very long supply chain. The pandemic has really amplified how vulnerable Maine is. We've seen empty store shelves. I know our local grocer is still struggling to keep vegetables in the produce department. Maine's not immune from the external forces of natural disease or pandemic, but we import upward of 90% of our food right now. And we just need a whole lot more of that coming from Maine's backyards and gardens. And so when we're thinking about these systemic problems, a structural change is needed. Just like building a house, we need a strong foundation in place to get more cohesive results. And a constitutional right is really a foundational element that can then guide future policy and lawmaking. So there's a sort of a glue that will hold these future decision-making instruments together by enshrining this this value, this principle at the highest legal guarantee that we possibly can.
Kathy, this question made it onto the ballot because it passed by 2/3 vote in the legislature, strong support by both Republicans and Democrats. But there is opposition to it from many different organizations. And one of those organizations is yours, the Maine Municipal Association. Why is the MMA opposed to this amendment? I understand you are not opposed to people's right to food.
That's correct. And so while we agree that ensuring all Maine residents access, unfettered access to food for nourishment, sustenance, and well-being is laudable, the vagueness of the proposed language has us concerned. Because it's a body of fundamental principles established by precedent according to the state, the constitutional language matters, we're really concerned with the vagueness and the enforcement of such language. So unlike a state law, which can easily be amended, the constitutional amendment must first be supported by the 2/3 majority and then the legislature and ratified by voters. So our primary concern is a number of state statutes relative to animal welfare, health and safety, zoning, things like that, in which municipalities are your first and primary access points when you have concerns or issues. And I think the second issue that we would make is that food is really food in Maine, food scarcity in Maine, and municipalities are at the forefront of providing food in Maine. Food scarcity is an economic issue more than it is an access to the kinds of things that are outlined in this constitutional amendment. So it's people need milk and eggs, not cows and hens. And I think that when we take a look at how we begin to, I look at this everything from animal welfare. If you look at an animal welfare issue in the state of Maine, if you look at zoning in the state of Maine, if you look at any of those things, the municipalities are your first line of enforcement. We put up zoning laws to protect health, safety, and welfare of our inhabitants. We determine in many cases where farming uses are appropriate based on density, land use, health and safety rules, shoreland zoning, things like that, animal welfare. And the process today is pretty complicated. If you walk into a code enforcement office and you say, I have a problem with my neighbors, I have a problem, they're keeping livestock. That issue becomes, it's simple, from a statutory perspective today, whereas handled through a code enforcement complaint, ADK, that can take months or years. Now you're talking about the potential to have livestock or invasive species or other things within areas of the city that may be not zoned for it. And that becomes a problem. Constitutional rights override state statute. And I think that the courts have made that determination.
So it's interesting, Kathy, that you're bringing up this point right at the beginning of the show, because already we have a couple questions coming in about this. So right away, I think I'll go to those. And an email from Jay and a similar question from Andy. Jay asks, if question three becomes law, does that mean my neighbors in Portland can raise hogs in their backyards? And a similar question from Andy, does this mean a neighbor could have hogs next door? So, or can roosters disturb the neighbors in close quarters? Is this what you're talking about, Kathy, that you're nodding right now? I can see you on Zoom. Is this the kind of thing you're talking about?
It is the kind of thing I'm talking about, and constitutional rights trump state statute or local law, and that's been established. So right now, what is a code enforcement complaint? What is a, if you call with pigs in your neighbor's yard, the question really becomes, how do we enforce it? And with a constitutional amendment, it becomes much trickier than a simple ADK complaint. And by simple, I mean, those complaints can take months to years to work out under simple statutory framework. When you throw in a constitutional right to food, all of that becomes far more litigious.
Sure, and let's talk to Heather. Yeah, so Heather, these are very different questions when you're talking about rural Maine or you're talking about somewhere like Portland or Bangor or Old Orchard Beach.
Absolutely, and I mean, I think it's very important for people to know that this argument that having a new right articulated in the Declaration of Rights in Maine's Constitution would undo an existing body of law is just patently false. The constitutional protection they're intentionally broad because later statutes and regulations have the role of defining and further fleshing out laws. So people should know that home rule is also in Maine's constitution. It's in Article 8. It's not in the Declaration of Rights. And no constitutionally protected right is a license to break any existing laws. And when courts look at these cases, what they're looking at to determine intent is what the legislative intent was. So if you're in a city and you have an ordinance for some part of the city to not have livestock because it doesn't make sense in an urban area, the policymakers now have a new metric. The city council can then look at, well, if we can't have hogs next door, well, how can we ensure that people do have access to adequate food in that scenario? So it's certainly a new metric, a standard of measure that policymakers will be asking themselves, how are we ensuring this right? How are we protecting it? But it doesn't undo any existing laws. And I don't think we have a line of people down at the Portland courthouse ready to bring suit should we ensure that we have the right to adequate and access to food and to grow and raise our own food.
So if I could just briefly respond to that, the Supreme Court has opined that when statute conflicts with the Constitution prevails, and the constitutional provisions are expected to last over time, and they're cumbersome to amend, and they're intentionally designed that way. State statute is significantly easier to deal with. Municipalities on many occasions, and I think you can check with almost any town office in the state of Maine or across the country, at times when they have had difficulty enforcing existing statute, when you add a constitutional layer in there, it creates an even greater conflict, more expensive litigation. And there are, interestingly enough, there are a number of people who challenge municipalities through the court systems as an opportunity to delay or drag out an action. And meanwhile, you could have animals in suffering conditions. And I think that you can look across Maine or the country and find where animals have been neglected or abused in the name of food. And you have had animals used in spite cases against their neighbors. I mean, on the ground, I think the vagueness of the language makes it very difficult for a municipal official on the ground to enforce this reasonably.
On the line with us now is Denise Cordova Monte. She is a lecturer in law at the University of Miami School of Law's Human Rights Clinic and has an expertise in food, right to food issues. Thanks for calling in, Denise.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You focused on right to food movements elsewhere, and I think you've been listening in on a part of the conversation right now. What have you seen in other places where right to food has been established through legal channels?
Sure. Yes. So indeed, the human right to food is a well-established, widely recognized human right around the world. The U.S. is one of only a handful of countries, really, that has not either explicitly or implicitly recognized it at the federal level. First of all, by enshrining it in its state constitution, Maine really would be filling in a gap that has been left by the federal government's hesitancy to protect the individual right to food in its federal constitution. What happens, nothing will change overnight by any means. By enshrining the right in the constitution, it really just sends the message that the right to food is a state priority, which might require monitoring, policy planning. It communicates to the people that it exists. It's an inherent natural right, as the proposed amendment language says. But by enshrining it and making it visible in the Constitution, it's a clear, it clearly communicates to Mainers that it exists, that it is a priority at the state level, and that it will be respected and protected.
But what about these concerns that it opens the door to animal cruelty or mistreatment?
Yeah, I've been hearing those concerns. First of all, the amendment does not expressly prohibit local regulation, nor does it intend to occupy the field of animal welfare law. So it does not authorize by any means anything around animal cruelty. Or anything along those lines. It does not preempt animal welfare statutory law. And if there is this concern that some terms might need further clarification, first of all, courts are not the only referee for what the amendment may mean an application. The legislature has police powers that can be invoked to clarify the language of the amendment. The legislature can certainly define the parameters of the right to food through its police powers to in the context of clarifying terms and statutes and defining different terms. And I understand that Maine legislatures have even already filed legislation to seek to clarify in statute definitions in the amendment around poaching and harvesting as they relate to hunting and fishing for the purposes of obtaining food. So, yes, if there are any concerns about terms needing to be further defined, for sure the legislature can act and define the parameters of the right to food in Maine.
Kathy Conlow, your point is that in Maine, often that even if the legislature passes laws, the court does end up finding that the Constitution overrides laws.
That's correct. Okay. I mean, you know, there are, that's the case across the country. I mean, there are certainly parameters with which laws can be made and local ordinances within state law can be made, but they're often slow to respond and they can certainly be challenged in a court. And it's often at the determination of the court, whether those laws are constitutional or not constitutional. So ultimately, interpretation falls with the courts.
Heather.
Yeah, I just wanted, obviously, when we were working on those food sovereignty ordinances all over the state, we became very well versed in Maine's home rule statute. And so there's a rebuttable presumption that ordinances at the local level are valid. It's just, I think, really important to contextualize this with the Article of Declarations and our other rights. So Maine people may not be super familiar with that, but I encourage everybody to read it, especially the first six rights. Those are the ones we most commonly think about in terms of, you know, those everyday rights that we don't even realize are being protected and respected until there is a threat to those. So we, you know, we have the right to keep and bear arms, but that doesn't give anybody the right to murder, because every right is going to enter into a field of law, as Professor Montes said, that is already existing and that is limiting. So you have the right to free speech. That doesn't mean that you can libel or slander if you're part of the press. It doesn't mean that you can endanger others with the exercise of that right. And very similarly with the right to food work, there is no abuse that is allowed with a new constitutional protection. It's just not how the law functions.
And before we let you go, Professor Montes, I wanted to ask you about how a right to food ordinance or law ties in with the issue of food insecurity and how this has tied in across the world with the issue of food insecurity.
Yeah, that's a great question. So indeed, the right to food has been interpreted to mean the right to feed oneself in dignity. And it means the right to adequate, accessible, available, sustainable food. And so it really seeks to address food insecurity at its root. It means that you should be able to feed yourself adequate food, food that's nutritionally adequate, that's sufficient in terms of quantity, that is adequate to you as an individual. So, for example, if you're a child, a growing child, your nutritional requirements are different than if you're an adult. So it needs to be adequate for you. It needs to be accessible, physically and economically accessible. You should not be having to decide between paying for rent or healthcare or food. It should be available within your neighborhood. And if you grow your own food, if you feed yourself from the land, you should have access mm-hmm. to those resources to be able to feed yourself. So again, it really seeks to address food insecurity at the root cause, not at a superficial level. And again, it's about feeding yourself with dignity in a dignified way, not through a charity model, but through a rights-based model.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Denise Cordova Montes with the Montes with the University of Miami School of Law. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Calling with help from the University of New England, online and on campuses in coastal Biddeford, Portland, and Tangier, Morocco, une.edu, and by the State Theater, presenting Gary Clark Jr. live in concert November 1st. Tickets on sale at State Theater, Portland.
Prices for what's known as food at home, chicken, meat, and fish, prices are up about 4.5% year on year.
Let me say, they got us by the neck. We're struggling right now, and the prices are still going up.
I'm Kai Rizdal, changing how we eat in inflationary times. Next time on Marketplace.
Marketplace today at 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. And join us this evening at 8 on Maine Public Television as Nature kicks off its 40th season on PBS with My Garden of 1,000 Bees. A story of surprise and revelation, a wildlife cameraman spends his time during the pandemic lockdown filming the bees in his urban garden and discovering the many diverse species and personalities that exist in this insect family. That's My Garden of 1,000 Bees on Nature tonight at 8 on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, learning about ballot question 3, the proposed constitutional amendment that focuses on the right to food. Joining me, Heather Ratberg of Quills End Farm. She helps lead the Right to Food campaign. And Kathy Conlow, Executive Director of the Maine Municipal Association, speaking in opposition to question 3. Share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainpublic.org. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Going now to Jason. Jason calling in from the Cooperative Extension. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Just wanted to comment that, you know, no matter anything that's being done related to this or how it passes or anything like that, that we're a neutral party, but we're here to provide any type of education that people need around food preservation or commercialization of food or selling food or anything like that. So we're happy to be a resource to anybody, regardless, to make sure that they're consuming safe food.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. Jason Bolton from the UMaine Cooperative Extension. Now going to Beth Galley, who is president of the Maine Animal Coalition. Beth, we've already been talking a little bit about concerns. I know that the Maine Animal Coalition is opposed to ballot question 3. What can you add to what's been said already?
Well, I haven't been privy to hear everything that's been said already, but I totally disagree with the fact that constitutional amendment won't have effect on existing laws. I mean, the Constitution is the supreme law of the state, and yes, you have to go back to court and challenge a law and say this is unconstitutional, but the judges will decide. And we're
so,
really
Beth,
against...
what do you? Let me ask you this: what do you realistically think will happen if this passes?
Well, one of the things that could happen is that farmers, we have certain rules to protect animals in agriculture. For example, you know, not have pigs so packed in together so they can't move, or gestation crates, lots of conditions that are considered inhumane. And a farmer could say, I'm not going to raise my animals according to these regulations because consumers have the right to food of their own choosing under this right to food amendment, and a lot of consumers don't care how their meat is raised.
Have you seen this happen in other places that have a right to food?
No other state in the union has a right to food.
Have you seen it happen in other countries where there's a right to food?
Well, I'm not an expert on international law, so I cannot say that.
All right. So go ahead, Heather Rettberg. I'm sorry, we're not hearing you, Heather. Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me now already?
Yes. Go
so
ahead.
Where Maine would be the first state to enshrine a right to food in our Constitution, we're certainly not the first state to protect the right to hunt and fish. And we do want to point out that the language does include to grow, raise, produce, harvest, and consume the foods of our choosing. And there are 23 other states in the country that have already protected a right to hunt and fish. So this is encouraging and empowering people to know that they can also grow and raise their own food, and then that will be protected in perpetuity, regardless of the external forces that are at play through corporate influence on federal policy tied to our policy through contracts and dollars that aren't always visible to the public. So it really is, I think, the homesteaders of Maine, farmers, fisher folk, we all see a shifting policy terrain, especially in light of animal rights groups that do have a national agenda to eliminate animal protein from our diet. And so I think we have to be really aware of that going forward, and that protecting this right in our Constitution would protect that in perpetuity.
So Heather, are you saying that you believe that groups like Beth's, or their end goal is to eliminate hunting as well?
This is what I understand. The Sportsman Alliance of Maine has recently endorsed the right to food for Maine because they are quite familiar with the animal wellness action, which I understand is either a DC-based group, or certainly if you look at their board,
Let me ask you that, Beth. Is that right? Is this indeed what you're advocating?
No, this is a phenomenon that the last 20 years that the National Rifle Association has encouraged states to put in a right to hunt, and 22 states have. This isn't something, a long tradition. And it's interesting is that these states who've done this, you know, for example, in Maine, we have a Sunday no hunting tradition, and so people can hike and bike and whatever. And so if we were advocating something, you know, people could say, well, we need a right to hike. We need a right to bird watch. You know, we the idea that you run to the Constitution and put your calls in to get a leg up on other people and bypass the legislature, bypass a discussion with people and traditions, I believe is wrong. And that's one reason we're against this right to food. It's a part of a thing. It's like right to farm. Two states developed a right to farm.
So right? Beth, is your organization, is the Maine Animal Coalition tied in with national groups such as PETA that is designed to discourage the, encourage the people not to eat animal protein at all?
We have absolutely no connection with PETA.
Or any other national group?
No, we have no connection with the national group, but let me tell you, we are proud advocates of a plant-based diet. That doesn't mean that, we want to have in the Constitution, it's illegal to eat meat. That would be wrong. The people decide that, not one particular law.
All right, Beth, Heather.
Yeah, I just want to point out on the point about this, the process of how a constitutional right happens. It's important for listeners to know that this language very much started from the grassroots, very much bottom-up democracy all the way. And we have worked with our legislators for the last 6 years through three legislative sessions. And a constitutional amendment must actually start in the legislature and needs a two-thirds vote of each chamber. This amendment proposal achieved an almost three-quarters vote of the entire Maine legislature. And then it comes out to the people to vote on. So we really feel that the people, the senators and the representatives, listen to the people of Maine in 100 towns and cities all across the state that have passed food sovereignty ordinances and now are giving it back to us to ratify.
Beth, before I let you go, I want to ask you, do you feel there's a way to support the right to food in a way that would not support animal rights, that would not threaten, animal rights?
Yes, I think that what we really need real programs and real policies to implement the agricultural changes we want, the food supply to people in need, and you don't need to have a constitutional amendment. You need to start at a lower level, and we need to understand what we're talking about. Most people in southern Maine have never heard of the food sovereignty movement. When I talk to them about it, they go, "What?" And this was passed in the end of June by the legislature, and we have just a matter of a few months to discuss it before we're going to vote to have it. We've had a few months to discuss it before we're going to vote to have it enshrined in our Constitution. And to me, it's really disconcerting.
Beth, thank you so much for calling. She's with Beth Galley with the Maine Animal Coalition. We're going to move on now. We're going to move to Jim. Jim is calling from Kennebunkport. Hi, Jim. What's your question?
Hi. My question is there anything in this amendment that would prevent people from simply demanding that the state provide them with food? It's so vague, and there was something the professor said before she got off, and I regret she's not here to answer this, but she said, that they're creating an access to food that is not charity-based, but rights-based. So
that's correct.
That's my question.
Kathy, go ahead.
No, I think he's right on. And on the one hand, I've heard that this is not about providing food, and on the ensuring that government provides food. On the other hand, I heard that rights based to food. So regardless, government provides food to hungry citizens. And again, this is an economic issue. This seeds issue, the larger conglomerate issue, I don't understand. I'm a retired city manager and a municipal official. What I do understand is that people are hungry and they need food. And the vagueness of this amendment doesn't lend me to understand how they'll get food. Like I said, people need eggs and milk, not cows and hens. And I don't know how this ensures that people aren't hungry anymore. And I guess That's the question I have, and how I'm going to enforce it as a municipal official, and how I'm not, we're, if you ask any code enforcement officer, they're run through the ringer on backyard chickens where they're not supposed to be, and protecting the health and safety of both the neighborhoods and the chickens, and it's a complex issue. Having home rule authority has never stopped the state from imposing state law on municipalities, unfunded mandates and regulations to enforce. So, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to be litigating these issues, basic municipal zoning issues, in front of courts. And it's going to render us powerless dealing with people who are bent on defying these things.
Heather, quickly.
Yeah, so I think the original question was about if it requires the government to provide food. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, right. I think it's just really important for the caller to just have a quick look at the Declaration of Rights in terms of broad language. So the rights are absolutely framed in a broad way. I'd like to, I guess, highlight the most recent change of an amendment to a Declaration of Rights was 6A, which was our discrimination clause. It was in 1963. And it was very explicitly naming classes of people who could not be discriminated against. And that language was changed to the present language that is much a broader civil rights, because those explicit categories get defined later in statute. And with that one, the Human Rights Act didn't pass until 8 years after the constitutional amendment. Same with Home Rule in Article 8, that passed in 1969, was added to the Constitution, but the statutory authority didn't come until the 80s that really fleshed out what that meant. So the function of a constitutional amendment is deliberately, intentionally, and thoughtfully left to be broad, but the language of our amendment is actually the liberty is more narrowly defined than our other rights, and the constraint is also much more explicit. And I would just really encourage you to look at Section 3 on religious freedom in terms of language and Section 4 on the freedom of speech and of the press, because those have very broad liberties that are outlined, that this personal, you know, every person is responsible for the abuse. That's as narrow as the constraint is on that one. So
Jim,
we've been much narrower and also more explicit in the constraint.
Jim, thank you for your question. We're going to take another break. When we come back, more people for and against this question 3. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from the UMaine Alumni Association, presenting Black Bear Alumni, Their Economic and Community Impact, available at umainealumni.com/impact, and by the Island Institute, helping Maine's island and coastal communities navigate change in our economy and climate. Join today at islandinstitute.org.
I'm Tanya Mosley. You may know Yosemite National Park for its striking granite cliffs and ancient sequoia trees. But for many years, nestled within that stunning scenery was the hidden history of the hundreds of Chinese immigrants who helped develop the park. A new exhibit acknowledges that history. Next time on Here and Now.
Here and Now, upcoming shortly at 12 noon today here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of The Phantom of the Opera, presented by Friends of the Kochmar Organ at Portland's Merrill Auditorium. Join organist James Kennerly as he brings life, intrigue, and musical accompaniment to the 1925 silent horror film. A live performance is happening on Saturday evening, October 30th, and a pre-recorded on-demand version is available now through November 1st. Maine Public members are eligible for 15% off tickets for the live event. For complete details, please visit mainepublic.org and click on events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are learning about ballot question 3, the proposed constitutional amendment that focuses on the right to food. Joining me, Heather Rettberg of Quills and Farm. She helps lead the right to food campaign. And Kathy Conlow, executive director of the Maine Municipal Association, speaking in opposition to question 3. On the line with us now is Craig Hickman, who is a Maine state senator from Winthrop. He's also an organic farmer. And Senator Hickman, thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you, Jennifer, for having me. How are you today?
Good. And I know that you have been working on this movement for a long time, food sovereignty issues. Why do you believe we need this constitutional amendment?
Thank you, Jennifer, for the question. I think the first thing I wanted to say is that I heard a question asked, I think, about how could one support this right to food amendment if it didn't threaten animal rights. And the first thing I want to say is that it does not threaten animal rights. Federal law is the supreme law of the land. And even if Maine had absolutely no statutes on animal welfare, on animal crimes, civil and criminal, federal law would prevail. Maine does have a very good set of civil and criminal laws regarding animal welfare for human consumption and not for human consumption. But the Animal Welfare Act of 1966 is a federal law. The Humane Slaughter Act of 1958, which was amended in 1978, is a federal law. The Preventing Animal Cruelty and Torture Act of 2019 is a federal law, and the Endangered Species Act. Those would all still apply because the enumeration of a right in a state constitution neither invalidates or sets aside laws that are in those state statutes, but they certainly have no bearing on federal law. Federal law governs the raising of livestock for human consumption, which includes meat and poultry, cows and pigs and chickens and goats, all the way down to the ground. There's no space at the local level to regulate animals for human consumption. And so I want to make it clear to your listeners, because I'm hearing a lot of disinformation, that the enumeration of this right to food constitutional amendment has no bearing on animal welfare laws, either in state statute or in federal law. And so we promote animal welfare, and so do all Maine people, even when they're not raising animals for food.
Thank you for that. I also want to ask you, Senator Hickman, about another element of this law that I know that you've been working on and is very important to you, which is a right to save and exchange seeds. Why is this such a concern of yours?
We've lost 94% of our biodiversity. The seeds that I save from year to year on my farm represent the DNA of the soil that they come out of. And so when you can continue to save your own seeds, which is to me the source of life, you are in control of the kind of food that you can grow from that seed. When you have four multinational corporations that control most of the seed supply, we know that there could come a time when our choices for the seeds that we have access to are also controlled by corporations through the government. There was a law in a budget. There was a line item in a budget in New Mexico not too long ago where money was set aside to allow the state to be the sole regulator of the seeds in that state. And a group of indigenous women found this particular inclusion in the budget and encouraged then governor of New Mexico to line item veto that, because if anyone knows the importance of saving and exchanging our seeds to preserve the biodiversity, to be able to grow all the food that we need for our health and well-being, it is indigenous people in this country.
Senator Hickman, thank you so much for calling and adding your voice to this conversation. Organic farmer and Maine State Senator Craig Hickman. We're going to move on now, and we're going to have the voice of Dr. Casey Cole, who's president of the Maine Veterinary Medical Association, opposed to question three. Dr. Cole, you heard just now what Senator Hickman had to say about protecting animals and that this is federal law that protects animals. What are your concerns, though, given that?
So, thank you for having me, first of all. So our main concern is just the broadness of the wording on the constitutional amendment. It really leaves it up to the courts to decide how to interpret it and how it applies to Maine law. So if someone's found to neglect their animals and the animal welfare department comes in and tries to change that, they're going to gum up the courts. They're going to try every defense they can, including throwing this new amendment and saying they don't have to follow what the animal welfare department said. And I don't want to leave it up to the courts to decide how animal welfare should be addressed. We have some of the strongest animal welfare laws in the state of Maine, and this law is risking that.
So, Dr. Cole, how is that different than now? I mean, wouldn't anybody already try to put up any defense that they could?
They can, and they do. But the problem, my biggest fear, is if the court says, yeah, this constitutional amendment says you have the right to raise these animals, the state can't come in and take that away from you, then we have stepped so far back in our welfare laws in the state. And this law doesn't even address any issues we have right now ongoing in Maine. The biggest concerns that Senator Hickman has is corporations controlling the seeds that we use to grow, but that's through federal law, which he also says that this doesn't overrule. So this doesn't even help against the concern he has. So it's just throwing a lot of chaos around the court system in the state for no reason.
All right. Heather Redper, quickly, please.
I will be very brief. And I just want to address one of the words the doctor used, which was fear. And I think that these are arguments primarily of fear and to cast doubt. But I would just direct everybody to please look at the proposed amendment language. The last clause constrains the right very explicitly by saying an individual may not commit trespassing, theft, poaching, or other abuses of private property rights. That would include domestic animals. You may not also abuse public lands or natural resources, including wildlife. So it is absolutely within the body of existing Maine statute, and you are absolutely constrained from abuse in your acquisition of food.
And Dr. Cole, before we go, what is it specifically that you're afraid that we will see if this constitutional amendment passes?
My concern is just we're going to see a lot of benign neglect, or just neglect in general. So people who start raising animals for food that don't actually know how to do it and are going to ignore the rules. So we have people that could, you know, be raising milking goats and not taking care of them as well as they could. They could be raising them on smaller plots of land than they should be able to, that wouldn't support the goats, or they could be raising a cow on a smaller plot of land that couldn't support the cow. So you can see a lot of like just thin animals not doing well, not just being taken care of well by people that mean very okay, like well, but just don't know how to do it and aren't going to listen because they have a right to have those animals.
Sure. I understand. I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for calling in. Dr. Casey Cole, president of the Maine Veterinary Medical Association. We have so little time left and so many good questions coming in. I have an email here from Catherine. Could this potentially impact lobstering and fishing industries? It seems like individuals could argue that they can set as many lobster traps as they want in public waters, which may impact the ability to control populations and fishermen's ability to make a living. Heather, very quickly, please.
Yeah, so the language of the amendment makes it clear that this is about non-commercial activity. It's for self-provisioning for your own sustenance, nourishment, health, and well-being, and not commercial activity.
All right, and an email from John. So, go ahead, Kathy.
I just think it's really important to specify that that is one of the concerns, right, is that ultimately that may need to be litigated. And I realize that it's thought that the language is very clear, but it's not that clear to me. And I don't think it's as clearly specified as the proponents of the language indicated as.
An email here from John. The referendum sounds highly philosophical in nature. Can someone give a concrete example of how this referendum would help a child gain greater access to food? Who would execute that process and how? Heather.
That is a great question. And I think that that is really one that gets at the heart of what the role is of a constitutional protection. So it isn't a statute that allows or disallows. It is absolutely enshrining a principle and a value of society that then becomes a new metric to inform policy and lawmaking. So it isn't everything. It's not the whole house. It isn't going to fix all the problems we have with hunger, but it is going to put a new foundation in place and a structure from which to build.
We'll go to Lori in Freeport. Lori, if you could go quickly, that'd be great.
Sure. I have a quick hypothetical to pose. Suppose you have one farmer that's an organic farmer and their neighbor is a conventional farmer. And the conventional farmer used pesticides, and the pesticides are blowing over to the organic farmer. My question is, how would that be resolved? Who would resolve that? And what would be the process of resolving that dispute between these two small farmers under this amendment?
Yeah, that's really beyond the scope of this amendment, I believe.
All right, Lori, thanks so much for your question. A tweet from June: Maine can be a leader in the local food movement. End all factory farms. They're moral abominations. Small farms and bartering are the way to go. Co-ops, not corporations. But then we have a tweet from Thomas: How will this affect Maine's ability to prohibit invasive species or license hunting, fishing activities? And you're nodding, Kathy.
I think it's going to be questioned. It's vague. The invasive species question is a good question. Again, enforced often at the municipal level with the help of state officials. But how are we going to do that? It throws into question, and it, at least the vagueness of the language makes it so that we're going to have to litigate it.
Heather.
I would just really remind everybody to read the language yourself. It is pretty clear. All of the laws that help that are tools now for municipalities and, you know, cities and town in Maine are going to remain tools. This is about enshrining a protection of an individual liberty, not about changing the entire structure of the body of Maine law.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you both for joining us today, talking about question three on the Maine ballot. Heather Rettberg is with Quills and Farm, and Kathy Conlow with the Maine Municipal Association. Today's sound engineer, KG Akimeladun, Jonathan Smith, and Cindy Hahn produce Maine Calling. And today's show will air tonight again at 7. On Friday, we're going to talk about question one. Visit MaineCalling.org to listen to past programs or to sign up for our podcast. I'm Jennifer Brooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.